This is the Breaker.News podcast for May 20th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features like the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines from around the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines from around the Pacific Northwest, the big deal feature, Aggregate IQ goes to the UK Parliament's Fake News Subcommittee, and The Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to someone who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is Vision Vancouver a complete and utter failure? Gregor Robertson and his caucus went on a victory lap last week after they banned plastic drinking straws effective 2019. Since 2008, Vision Vancouver has failed to end homelessness, has inspired tent city protests, has overbuilt bike lanes, including one that blocks access to Vancouver General Hospital. Vision Vancouver let heritage houses be razed by absentee investors from China. Vision Vancouver increased bureaucracy. There are now more than 1,300 people in the six-figure club at City of Vancouver. And Vision Vancouver deleted email and lied about it. They also hiked taxes faster than inflation, and they also let a riot happen in 2011. But they've banned plastic drinking straws. Whoa. The October 20th civic election can't come soon enough. Throw the bums out. Well, at least the bums that are running again and trying to stick around. Mayor Robertson is taking the easy way out rather than facing certain defeat at the ballot box. What do you think? Email me, bob@thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Sum Lok Kai reports, Beijing police edited video to mislead public over Hong Kong reporter's arrest, Journalist Association says. The Hong Kong Journalists Association slammed mainland Chinese authorities over the incident involving Now TV journalist Cui Chunming, who was, on May 16th, handcuffed and dragged into a police van while bleeding, then detained for 4 hours. The association also accused Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam Cheng Yut-Ngor and other top officials for going easy on Beijing police, who arrested Cui while he was covering a Beijing Lawyers Association hearing involving human rights lawyer Shi Yanyi. In the Star Online, M. Kumar reports, Sarawak Report editor Claire Rucastle Brown steps onto Malaysian soil. Claire Rucastle Brown is back in Malaysia following the fall of the Barisan Nasional government. The return of the Sarawak Report's editor, who was persona non grata during the administration of Prime Minister Najib Razak, went through Malaysian immigration without a hitch. The Star reported on May 17th that the Sarawak Report website was now accessible again after being barred by the Malaysian Communications and Multimedia Commission for more than 2 years. In July 2015, the MCMC blocked access to the Sarawak Report on grounds that it undermined the stability of the nation. And in the Japan Times, Kyoto News Service reports, Pacific Isle nations call out North Korea for first time, demanding concrete denuclearization steps. In the joint declaration released after the gathering in the port city of Iwaki, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and leaders from 14 Pacific Island nations expressed deep concern over the North evading international sanctions by transferring cargoes at sea. It is the first time for Japan and the Pacific Island countries to mention the North Korean issue in their declaration. Japan has hosted a regional summit with the Pacific Island nations every 3 years since 1997. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Oregonian, Associated Press reports, UO asks anti-illegal immigrant group to change its O. The University of Oregon wants the politically conservative group Oregonians for Immigration Reform to stop using a green O logo on its website. Though the logo is not identical to the one associated with the Ducks, it's skinnier and has a fir tree in the middle, the university has threatened legal action if the group does not change the stylization of its O. The UO and its licensing partners have sent about 20 such letters over the last 3 years regarding the O or other trademarked images. In the Everett Herald, Caleb Hutton and Ricky King report, suspect arrested in 1987 deaths of young couple from British Columbia. William Earl Talbot II, 55, of SeaTac, Washington, was booked into the Snohomish County Jail late May 17th for investigation of first-degree murder. Talbot is accused of killing Jay Cook, who was 20, and Tanya Van Culemborg, who was 18, while the high school sweethearts were traveling in Washington in a bronze Ford van in November 1987. The couple drove around Puget Sound from Saanich, BC to Port Angeles, Allen, Bremerton, and Seattle. Talbot was determined to be the only potential suspect through a new forensic technology known as genetic genealogy, the same technique used to find the suspected Golden State Killer in April. In Nanaimo News Now, Dominic Abassi reports City of Nanaimo extremely frustrated after councillor's brother leaks confidential report. On May 17th, Robert Fuller, brother of councillor Gord Fuller, posted a forensic investigative report authored by city auditor KPMG to several Facebook groups. The report was commissioned by a lawyer previously hired by Chief Administrative Officer Tracy Samra to investigate the prevalence of personal expenses on city credit cards. City Clerk Sheila Gurry told Nanaimo News Now she was extremely frustrated by the leak, the fourth from the city now being investigated by the Office of the Information and Privacy Commissioner. The other three leaks under investigation are Councillor Fuller posted letters containing legal advice to Councillor Diane Brennan on Facebook. A private letter written by Mayor Bill McKay to consultant Heather McKenzie ended up on the windshield of a citizen, and the Goldner Report, investigating complaints filed by Samra, which was leaked to the Globe and Mail. Also this week in The Breaker, the Labour-sponsored Working Opportunity Fund's twice-delayed annual general meeting is finally set for June 27th. The value of one of its investment pools fell nearly $29 million last year. And Rich Coleman's name is being tested by a pollster for a possible run for mayor in Langley or Surrey, or, the more likely scenario, as a Conservative candidate in the Cloverdale-Langley City riding in the 2019 federal election. And finally, Peel Regional Police in Ontario have a Canada-wide arrest warrant for 21-year-old Jaspal Singh Uppal, the third suspect in the March beating of an autistic man in Mississauga. Uppal is believed to be from BC, and you can see his mugshot at thebreaker.news. Read those stories and more in thebreaker.news. It's the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. Jeff Sylvester flew from Victoria to London to testify at a committee of United Kingdom Members of Parliament on May 16th. Sylvester is one half of the duo that founded Aggregate IQ. Aggregate IQ, or AIQ, is the small political advertising and data analysis company which made millions of dollars on contracts for the Vote Leave campaign in the UK's 2016 Brexit referendum. AIQ has also worked with BC Liberal and Green Party campaigns in British Columbia. The UK's Digital, Culture, Media and Sport Committee spent 3 hours grilling Sylvester about AIQ operations and its connections to the now-defunct Cambridge Analytica and its parent company, the SCL Group. The committee's ongoing inquiry into fake news was rather subdued compared to a similar committee hearing in Ottawa last month. That's where Liberal, Conservative, and NDP MPs gave Sylvester and his business partner, Zach Massingham, a rough ride. They even questioned their honesty. Sylvester said he knew whistleblower Christopher Wiley, who is also from Victoria, since 2005. Wiley, in turn, introduced Sylvester to the SCL Group in 2013. Sylvester told Chair Damian Collins that until mid-2015, 80% of AIQ's revenue was from contracts with the SCL Group.
During this time, there's quite a lot of work, obviously, with SCL. Are you working with other clients as well? Yeah, so we've worked with all kinds of clients doing website development and online advertising. SCL at that time was certainly our largest client, a largest single client, but it wasn't our only client.
Okay. Give us an idea of what your company's turnover was at that time.
In terms of staff?
No, in terms of revenue.
Well, I don't have that right now. I can certainly try to find that for you and get it to you, but I don't have it in front of me right now.
Yeah, but I mean, rather than going to Companies Housing British Columbia, if you were able to just send us the turnover figures for your company accounts.
Yeah, I can send you some general figures when I get back to the office. Yeah.
Well, just, I mean, presumably you have to report accounts as a company.
Yeah, there's some reporting we have to do, and I'm happy to share that with you.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, I'm not asking for secret commercial information, just the...
No, I understand, just general top-line numbers. Yeah, I can see if I can find that for you, yeah.
Yeah.
Sylvester would not disclose any of AIQ's clients, but he told Labour MP Ian Lucas that there are two minority shareholders, but he did not disclose their names either.
Can you name any of the other clients you're working on?
Unfortunately, I can't. Okay. We do owe confidentiality.
Were these local... local companies in Victoria?
Exactly. There were some local, well, not in Victoria, but there were some local ones in British Columbia, but mostly located in Canada and the United States.
But you can see, you know, why people ask you these questions about Cambridge Analytica and SCL, because you're in those years in particular, and you're a new company, so quite, you know, important years for that business. Your business basically is SCL. You know, it's SCL that's paying the mortgage.
They were certainly our largest client, yes.
Labour MP Joe Stevens cornered Sylvester on AIQ finances.
Just going on from that about your current clients and past clients, you said before you're the co-founder, there are just two directors, you and Zach Massingham, but you didn't know what your approximate turnover was. Can you just give us a rough idea what your turnover is?
By turnover, you mean revenue?
Yeah.
In which year, like in 2015?
Well, no.
Now? I don't know. We're just finishing our taxes for this year.
So you don't know. So, I mean, I used to run a business. I would be able to say like that, you know, because I'd be looking at the accounts every month.
The trouble is that I, you know, our depending on the client and depending on the situation, our revenue might be recognized in different years and such. And so I don't want to... I'd rather give you the perfectly accurate information.
So SCL, you said, represented about 80% of your revenue during the period that you were working with them, and they were the main client.
Approximately.
The closest the UK meeting came to fireworks was when Chair Damian Collins challenged Sylvester on AIQ's lack of cooperation with the UK Information Commissioner's investigation.
Just regards to the ICO... As you know, this is all, you know, you've spoken a bit about this. This was of interest when you gave evidence to the Canadian Parliament. And I've spoken with the ICO again today. They've just said, you know, for the record, that your company has responded to letters. I understand there's a discussion about whether you'll meet with them while you're in London. I hope you do. But they said they've not received any information from you directly in response to their questions. There's been nothing that, no documents, no data, nothing that they've requested has been delivered to them. So you may have, there's been contact and correspondence, but no information shared. And that the only information they've been able to gather so far to support their investigation has come to them from third parties and not from you. So I'd ask you, could you just confirm for the committee, and the RCO here in the room as well, you know, what actually have you given to them? Because you've referred several times now to information that you shared with the ICO. What have you directly given to the ICO?
So they sent us a letter on, I got the update here, on 17th of May, 2017, and we responded to their letter with the letter. The whole content was the letter. And then again on 30th of January, 2018, they sent us a letter and we responded with a letter. After that, we communicated, I don't have the exact dates, but we sent them another letter. And then immediately following the appearance at the Canadian Parliament, we sent another letter specifically to ask why they had mentioned that they believed we weren't cooperating. We've subsequently had quite a lot of back and forth on email. It's certainly our intention to cooperate as best as we can. And so we've had quite a number of email go back and forth now. And indeed, we are meeting with some of their officials after this meeting.
Yeah. But you know, you can, you know, I can, you can engage in correspondence with someone about questions you want to answer. Without answering the questions, that seems to be the case. And they've contacted you saying, we want information about things that are relevant to our investigation. You could respond to their letters, but you know, and you can say, well, we're in contact, you know, we're cooperating, but you're not actually cooperating because you're not giving them what they're asking for.
Well, we do have restrictions with respect to what we're able to provide because of confidentiality with our individual clients, and we're clear about that with them. If we can't give them something, we've been clear. But I can only answer the questions as best as I can. And when we reached out after the committee meeting, then they responded. We invited them again to send any additional questions they thought we'd have answered, and they have sent those to us.
Yeah.
And we've told them we're going to go through and make sure that we address those individually.
Yeah.
And provide that information to them. And so we're going to do our best to get them all the answers and information they need. But yeah. Again, we do have confidentiality obligations. We have to balance. So.
Yeah, but this is the UK Information Commissioner seeking information, you know, relevant to an investigation they're running about use of data in an election in the UK, a referendum election in the UK. So they and their jurisdictional power is absolute. And I think it's, you know, I think today and in previous occasions, I think you sought to confuse us by saying that responding to letters is the same as answering questions, and that's what seems to be lacking. And I hope that what you said today is you are going to answer their questions, you are going to meet with the Information Commissioner while you're in London. So I'm pleased to hear that. But I mean, it's also the case you wrote to the Information Commissioner telling her to back off, and you thought the investigation was damaging your company. Isn't that correct?
In one of our letters, and I'm happy to provide all of that correspondence to the committee confidentially.
I'd be grateful for that.
Yeah. So once I get back to the office, I'll send that to you. In one of the letters, we did state that we thought that the commissioner's comments were not appropriate that she'd made to the press, and that her comments had been damaging. That's true. And subsequently, we did say that we thought that the matter was closed because we believed that we'd answered all their questions substantively. It's clear once we got to the Canadian Commission, and I believe you had sent an SMS or a text to one of the members of Parliament to say that the commissioner had told you that we had not been cooperating or she was not happy with our answers, whichever it was, and I haven't seen that SMS. But and that's why we reached out to them right after to clarify. And
yeah.
So we had no, aside from those two letters and our two responses, we had no letters from them saying what you told us or through the committee in an SMS. And so I would hope that rather than communicate through you or through the media, that if they had additional questions, they would just let us know. Yeah. Or if we'd not answered something to their satisfaction, they would just let us know, and we'll happily respond.
The reason I watched the session in the Canadian House of Commons, and I contacted a member of the committee who'd asked you about, Nathan Erskine-Smith, who asked you about this, because your answer to the question was, you were cooperating with the investigation, you know, which was not the case.
Well, we believed we were.
Investigations continue in the UK and Canada into AIQ's role in political campaigns. The Breaker will keep you posted on any major developments. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the men and the women of the Canadian military, local police, fire, and ambulance personnel, and others who are responding to the floods throughout the BC interior, including in Grand Forks. Thank you for your service, and thank you for the long hours that you are putting in to help those who have lost their homes or cannot go home because of the natural disaster. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for May 20th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on May 20th, 1873, that's 145 years ago, Bavarian-born Levi Strauss and Latvian-born Jacob Tavis got their patent for blue jeans with copper rivets? Well, now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.